Good morning. We'll continue with next speaker up is David Meline, CFO of 3M Corporation. David has been CFO for the last 2 years, and along with the new CEO, Inge Thulin, has helped revitalize the 3M story. And he has a few brief comments. We'll go to our fireside chat format. So with that, David Meline.
Thank you, David. Okay, good morning. As David said, I'm the CFO at 3M, and this is a very exciting time in history for 3M. Last year was a transition year for the company, and really we were doing preparations under our new CEO, Inge Thulin, who became CEO after working in the business for 30 years, became CEO in February of 2012. And last year what we did then is we spent the year to really fully engage the leadership team, to go through and debate, take the opportunity to debate what was working very well for the company, and also looking at what we felt we could do better. So we spent much of the year last year with the entire senior management team working through those challenges, and that culminated in November of last year, where we rolled out what was our vision for the company and strategies and also the relevant targets and metrics that we plan to use to run the business over these next 5 years. So specifically on those targets that we rolled out in November, there were four. The first one being 9 to 11% average earnings per share growth over the next 5 years. Secondly, 4 to 6% organic sales growth is the target for the company. Thirdly, 20-plus percent return on invested capital. And then finally, we added a fourth and new objective for the company, which was 100% free cash flow conversion that we expect to achieve. So in doing so, we wanted to set targets for the business that were aggressive but we felt would be achievable. And we came up with this plan, which is a balanced mix of sales growth, profitability, and cash generation. The company does continue to grow and generate premium margins and return on capital, and we don't see that changing. What's also true is we have a multi-pronged and well-balanced approach to capital allocation. First and foremost, we're investing in capital expenditures to grow our business organically. 3M's model is very much of an organic innovation model. We also indicated that we would raise modestly through the period the investment in R&D. So presently we invest somewhere around 5.5% annually in R&D, which we expect by the end of the period to raise to 6%. And we'll continue to also allocate $1 to $2 billion annually towards acquisitions. Returning cash to shareholders has been and will continue to be an important priority for the company. We've returned 89% of our reported net income to shareholders over the last decade via shares, buybacks, and dividends. And we recently increased our dividend by 8%. Which was the 55th year consecutively that we raised our dividend. And we also received authorization for another $7.5 billion buyback program. In terms of other capital priorities, our pension liabilities are very well funded, and we have a strong financial position for the company. In terms of 2012, just briefly turning to 2012, we had good results despite what was a mixed economy last year. Sales were nearly $30 billion, which was up 1% in dollar terms and included a 2.4% headwind from the strong dollar last year. And we had organic local currency growth of 2.6%. We expanded our margins last year by 0.8 percentage points to 21.7%. Which was based on, in a low-growth environment, really managing cost effectively, and we delivered a little over $1 billion, which we expect to repeat again this year in terms of savings from Lean Six Sigma. Earnings per share were up 6% last year to $6.32 a share. We returned $3.8 billion of cash to shareholders via dividend and buyback. And we had a 20% return on invested capital. In 2013, we expect that growth will be mixed again this year, as it was in 2012, and we indicated that we expect to grow organically 2 to 5% this year, including 8 to 11% in Latin America. Asia Pacific, we expect the growth to improve somewhat to 2 to 7% this year. U.S., we expect to grow 2 to 5% organically. And in Western Europe, we expect a range of -3% to +1% growth. And then finally, regarding Q1, it's played out as we thought it would, which is in the context of a pretty challenging first half. We had organic currency growth of 2.1% in the first quarter, operating margins of 21.6%. Earnings per share was up 1% in the first quarter to $1.61 a share, and we returned $1.25 billion of cash to shareholders, and we indicated that we expected we would see similar trends here in Q2. So with that, I would be happy to open a dialogue and take some questions.
Thank you, David. I'll begin some of the discussion right now. Maybe first, just on, if you can, talk a little bit about nearer-term trends, perhaps first in Europe. Any signs of improvement in that region?
No, actually. So as I said, we expect to have growth this year somewhere between -3% and +1% for the year. We saw -3% in the first quarter. And it looks to be pretty steady right now as we move through the year. So, you know, we do, it's a little bit mixed. We see the UK is showing some signs of growth right now. But generally speaking, the industrial business did weaken somewhat in the first quarter, and that included sales into, obviously, the automotive sector was weaker in the first quarter and into the second quarter, and that reflected in our business. So we saw some weakness in industrial. We saw some, you know, if I look across the business, we did grow in healthcare by 1% in the first quarter in Europe, and we expect that to continue. And we do see some specific areas where you see some growth opportunities. So, for example, to kind of contrast with automotive OEM, we think we'll grow in automotive aftermarket business because when people don't buy new cars, they tend to fix their old ones. So we're trying to focus where we have growth opportunities in different sectors, and we're also looking as to how we can become more competitive in Europe. So even though last year we had a decline of around 3%, we did raise our margins by a percentage point last year in Europe based on efforts to become more competitive there.
And maybe switching to Asia, first you have a very large operation in Japan.
Right.
Talk about maybe some trends you're seeing in that country as we speak.
So we have a significant business in Japan, a very successful and capable subsidiary. It represents almost 9% of our total global sales. We've had a presence there for many decades. We saw weaker performance from our business in Japan in the first quarter based on a weaker economic environment. We do expect that to improve now as we see the effects of the policy changes that are going on in Japan. So we are seeing some level of improvement in Japan. What's also true for us is we have been and are focusing our business on, over the recent years, and that continues, to really shift the profile of the business so we're more focused on domestic businesses where we think there will continue to be growth in the future. So we've been putting more emphasis on our healthcare business in Japan, our consumer business in Japan, and as a result, we grew in the first quarter 6 and 7% respectively in those sectors. And what we did see also was negative growth, particularly in the electronics business, which is going through an inventory correction here in the first quarter, which we expect to continue through the first half. So kind of a mixed picture for us depending on the sectors that we have in that country.
And maybe switching over to China, any sort of, you know, improvement there or any acceleration you can point to within the Chinese environment?
Yeah, so if you look at China, we've been growing in the 15 to 20% range through 2011. That then slowed to basically zero growth during the first 9 months of 2012, and starting in the fourth quarter of last year and continuing through to the present, we saw an improvement and a recovering growth such that we grew 17% in the fourth quarter and 10% in Japan in the first quarter of this year. And we expect to continue to grow in Japan. If we look across the business, for example, in the industrial space, general industrial, we think we'll grow in the high single to potentially double digits going forward. We have a very healthy business there, so we continue to gain share in China. But, you know, we think the growth will be somewhat more modest than what we experienced over those prior couple of years, which I think over the long term is probably a healthier way for the economy to evolve than what they were experiencing previously.
You mentioned some of the challenges in electronics. Any signs of overall improvement in the Asian electronics environment yet? Or
we see the situation is setting up for an improvement in the second half. So we had indicated we had, if you look at our electronics and energy business, we declined in sales in the first quarter by 2%. We indicated we expected that to continue now in the second quarter, but then to see an improvement in the second half. And everything that we see right now would point to that. So that would be a combination of, as we entered this year, we could see that there was a need for some inventory corrections in the channels, which is largely now taken place. We could see that semiconductor fab utilization was down, but if you look now at the outlook, it looks like we'll see some improvement. And then in our case, we have a lot of components that are spec'd into consumer electronics devices, which we right now see we have very good spec in for products that will be launched in the second half. So the combination of several things we think will lead to some improvement for our business and an upturn here in the second half.
Okay. Maybe just in the Southeast Asian economy is not as large of a market if you got,
yeah.
It's still important.
We've been seeing very good growth in places like Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines. We've been growing in the teens in that sector of the world, and I don't see any reason right now that won't continue. It's a very good business for us, and I think the circumstances are setting up that we have a chance to really grow pretty steadily in that area going forward.
And maybe back to the Americas, you have a very nice and growing business in Latin America, Mexico and Brazil. Talk about some of the what you're seeing there right now.
Sure.
Is that growth continuing? And
Yeah, so we've grown in double-digit organic local currency growth here over continuously over about 3 years now, and it appears to us that will continue. If you look for us, it's Latin America. We've been present there for about 70 years, and it's our most developed of the developing markets. So we have a footprint that's very well balanced across our industrial, electronics, healthcare, and consumer businesses. And with that kind of a footprint, it really gives us a basis for sustainable growth and market share gains. So we expect to continue to see double-digit growth, certainly through this year, and I don't see any reason why that would not continue.
And it's left the U.S. You've had some of your best organic top-line growth here in a couple of years in the U.S. Can you talk about, again, it's 2% we had in Q1.
Yeah.
Is that growth continuing, albeit modest, but still above the market? And what's really driven the revitalization mm-hmm. of your U.S. growth
dynamic? So we indicated for the company in total this year, we would grow 2 to 5%. We expect the U.S. to grow also 2 to 5% this year. So as you pointed out, David, in the first quarter, we grew a little over 2. So we do expect some modest improvement as we go through the year based on a view that the economy is going to continuously show some improving resilience. And for us, our best franchise and healthiest franchises are clearly here in the U.S. Our brand position is very good. We have a broad presence across all of the sectors. We have worked very hard to improve the health of our product portfolio, and that's really come through here for us with improved performance and margins in the U.S. In recent times. So we feel good about our ability to continue to grow the business here in the U.S.
How would you characterize the underlying U.S. demand strength?
It's been quite steady. I wouldn't say we see any individual inflection points one way or another. We have seen, for example, in the consumer space, we did see as we finished last year, we saw improvement in our momentum in the consumer business, which continued into the early part of this year. And we think that that is quite steady. Inside of that consumer business, beyond our products like Post-it Notes and Scotch Tape, we also have a very good construction home improvement business, which clearly will benefit and is benefiting from things when people are renovating their homes. So we're starting to see people invest to do that, and that's helping that business nicely. So consumer business looks quite good for us. Healthcare is, we feel good about the healthcare business in the U.S. We were concerned a couple of years ago with the advent of the new regulatory environment that was being put in place. But in the end, to the extent that our products, we look to help hospitals become more efficient and more competitive, and that obviously plays into the objectives of Obamacare. So we feel quite good about our prospects in the healthcare business in the U.S. And then the industrial business continues to be important for us, and sometimes people ask us about our manufacturing. We actually are not onshoring because we never left, so we have a very healthy profile in the U.S. of manufacturing, which is efficient and competitive, and we'll be able to support the growth that we'll be seeing here in the U.S. going forward.
So Dave, on your new financial targets, which I would call them more realistic than your prior targets, what's been the effect on the organization having these targets in place that are, I think, achievable, if not beatable, and what's the overall sense?
Yeah, good question. So the reaction has been very positive for us. So when we set out, as I started the discussion today, laying out those targets, what we really wanted to do was to put together a set of targets that really describes how we create value in 3M. And so as we looked at that, we said, certainly earnings growth is relevant for us and an important metric. We've grown at double digits. We've grown 10 to 11% over the last decade. And it felt to us like that was certainly very achievable going forward. So we reaffirmed that goal for the company. We reaffirmed our return on invested capital goal of 20%+, which is very characteristic of how the business model works in 3M, where we try to very carefully deploy capital and use it effectively across the many diverse businesses. We've delivered returns at that level for decades, and we think that that will continue and is an important part of our business model. On organic growth, which is, I think, what you might have been referring to, we had formerly had a higher target, upwards to 8% annual growth in organic revenue, and we felt that it was appropriate to reset that to something that was still aggressive but more achievable, so we reset that to 4-6% percent annually, which is basically what we expect to be 1.5 times industrial production. So that's a level we've performed at over the last decade. And we think certainly that there's no reason that we can't continue to achieve that level of growth. So we reset that, and I think that's been a positively received by our teams because it's something that's still a challenge for them, but we think we can reasonably achieve that. And then finally, we added the fourth free cash flow conversion, which we have converted at 99% over the decade. So it's, again, very much descriptive of the model that we have. And we wanted to reflect that appropriately in our goals.
Let me see if there's any questions from the audience. If not, I'll keep on going. Dave, just on the R&D spending, I mean, innovation has been really on fire 3M for the last few years, yet you're still increasing R&D spending. What does 3M do well on the R&D innovation side? Mm-hmm. What could it do better? And what does it say that you're increasing your R&D spending? Did you underinvest, which didn't really show up in the numbers?
Right.
Bring those all into context.
Yeah, sure. So, as I said in the opening comments, with the new CEO, we took the chance to look at what was working well for the company and what we felt we could do better. And one of the discussions we had in the company was we could see we'd been investing to improve the health of the product portfolio over these last 6 to 7 years, and we had a very nice improvement in the health of the overall portfolio in the company, very much across the business, whereas formerly it had been concentrated in not all of our businesses, but in a few of the divisions. So as we looked last year, we felt good about the fact that a third of our sales last year came from products launched within the last 5 years, which was up quite substantially from the low 20% range as recently as 8 years ago. So we'd improved the overall health of the portfolio. But as we looked at it, what we recognized was, no surprise, businesses, as they prioritize their R&D spending, will typically prioritize projects which will deliver revenue and income within the 1 to 3 year time frame. So a lot of incremental investment for replacement products and products that incrementally improve the attributes of performance. But we felt there was an opportunity and really a need for us to be investing on the margin a little bit more in longer-term, higher-risk, more disruptive opportunities. So we always have a portion of our portfolio we invest in that space, but we felt that it would be appropriate for us to step up the commitment in that area. So what we did is we announced then that we would raise by the end of the period our R&D spend by about a half a percentage point through the period, and the intent is to focus that incremental spending investment on these higher risk, more disruptive investments. So the way we're doing that is we created a centrally managed fund. We're running it more like a venture investment where we put out a call to the organization for ideas of projects that they weren't able to fund already in their base R&D portfolio. And we articulated that we're most interested in projects that combine multiple technologies, which tend to be, for us, the most disruptive, projects that could be big platforms in the future, projects that would typically have a 3 to 7 year time frame before they would be brought to market, and by definition, projects that are higher risk in nature. And we're running it more like a venture portfolio with milestones where we meet and look at progress, and if they're meeting them, we'll continue to fund, and if they don't, we'll drop them off. So the good news is maybe bad news or good news, I don't know which. We had 300 ideas come in the first round of funding for which we funded a small portion of those, which tells you there are a lot of interesting opportunities out there that we can bring forward. And we think it's important for us to continue to have a sustainable profit and growth equation to make sure we're investing appropriately in those bigger, longer risk, those higher risk opportunities.
Very good. David, optical gets a lot less attention these days. Talk about where that business stands today and the growth potential over the next couple of years.
Sure. So the optical systems division, if you followed the company for some time, has been an important contributor to the company. It is the business where we provide film that's used for brightness enhancement in Originally, it was focused on the LCD TV market. It actually enabled the LCD TV market to exist. And it's evolved over time to be a business which is now primarily one where we sell into applications such as smartphones, tablets, and laptop PCs, which are battery powered, and where the value proposition of our film is still very strong, whereas the LCD TV market has matured, and it features much less prominently in the business. So if you look this year, we'll have 75% of our sales will be pointed at applications where products have a battery powered application, and only 25% into the LCD and monitor TV areas. And the reason why the value proposition is very strong in the battery powered area is if you look at a tablet device, one piece of our film will increase the battery life from 6 to 10 hours. So it's a very important and necessary component in those types of devices. So we continue to innovate in that space. We continue to believe that we can provide new breakthrough technologies that are valuable to that business. But what's also true is the optical business is now around 4% of our revenue as a company and somewhere around 4% of our income. So it's a more appropriate member of the family, as opposed to in the past it was upwards to 20% of the income of the company as recently as 5 or 6 years ago. So we've managed it to be an important member of the portfolio, but also will not create the level of swings up and down as we've had from time to time in the past. And then the final comment I'd make, our laboratories in the Optical Systems Division are the home of micro-replication technology, which is used broadly across the company. So it's also a source of technology for us. I think we apply that micro-replication in some 18 divisions in very diverse applications. So it's the home. It's an important source of technology innovation for the whole company.
Very good. And I'll just check one more time for any questions in the audience. Otherwise, I'll keep on going. Dave, you've now classified your business systems into three groups, right? Heartland, Push Forward, and Strategic Review.
Right.
What were you saying on the last piece, Strategic Review, in terms of?
Yeah. So just briefly, we, as one of the things we rolled out last year, as we look at managing the company going forward, Inge and I believe strongly that there's an opportunity for us to add value from the corporate level by looking at really strategically focusing our resources where the best opportunities lie. So we classified our divisions into these categories, as you mentioned. First and foremost, a group we call Heartland, a good Midwestern term, which is five of our 37 divisions that represent about a third of our revenue. And these are big franchises that have a good position in the markets around the world. They include industrial adhesives and tape, abrasives, personal safety, electrical markets, and automotive aftermarket. We classify the second group into what we call push forward, which tend to be medium-sized franchises, which we believe will have very good growth characteristics, above-average growth characteristics going forward. And then finally, we classified a group of our businesses under strategic review, which are, as we look at our own business portfolio, what we tend to see are there's certain attributes of our businesses that are successful that they typically have. So a few that come to mind. One is a business where we combine multiple technologies in novel combinations to create products which are differentiated and uniquely solving problems. We tend to be very successful, whereas when we're only using one or maybe two of our technologies, we tend not to have as sustainable of a position going forward. Secondly, businesses that have sufficient scale to be relevant to our customers is important to us because we operate best when we work on a strategic relationship basis solving customers' problems. And when we're too small, it's not worth their while to invest to work with us. And then thirdly, businesses that are global in scope, that are naturally well-tuned to be able to distribute through our global network, we tend to do better. So businesses missing one or two of those components tend not to do as well financially, and ended up being those businesses that we have in strategic review. And so now this year we're going through a process with those businesses, which represent about 8% of the revenue of the company, to look at the alternatives to address the gaps that they have. So we've asked them to work with us at the corporate level on a plan to either fix the business, to combine it with another business to address these strategic gaps they might have, to harvest the business if we think there's not a future for the business, or to potentially sell the business if we think there's a better owner elsewhere for them. And so we're working with all of the businesses. We haven't named them because we think it's appropriate to work with the leaders of the businesses on those alternatives. And we've had one case where we did combine the business, which we've talked about externally, our security systems division. We had another case we recently divested of a business that we've had for some 40 years, a small business. Some of you might know Scientific Angler, which was a business that made rods and fishing line. We sold to Orvis because we thought that they would be a better and more strategic owner of that business than 3M. So we have some cases we're starting to see, which would be an indication of how we're moving through that review process.
Okay. David, on the M&A front first, Ceradyne, how is that integration progressing and maybe the opportunities going forward for that platform?
So Ceradyne, a transaction we did in the fourth quarter of last year, which is in the ceramics space, which is an area that 3M has been present for many decades, actually. So we have about 10% or $3 billion of our sales last year were using that ceramics technology platform as one of the technologies in their business. But our business we've been in ceramics has been products that were formulated in a liquid soluble formulation in the manufacturing process. And we had never been able to move into the other area of ceramics, which is in ceramics which are in powder form as part of the manufacturing process. So we ended up acquiring Ceradyne, who has deep expertise in that side of the ceramics business, and we're in the process of integrating it right now. It's going very well. So if you look at the financials, we're ahead on the bottom line of where we thought we would be. We are behind on the top line, primarily because they have a fairly significant exposure to defense, and with troop withdrawals happening, the sales have gone down there, so we're a little bit below where we thought we'd be at this time on the revenue side. But importantly for us, we like the acquisition, in particular the synergies that we believe we'll create by integrating these technology capabilities that they have with our other platforms. So we've got now some 15 divisions who have identified projects where we can use Ceradyne's capability to create new and novel combinations of technologies and products. So that looks very good for us. And we've also found that very quickly we've gotten some quick wins where we have relationships in different industries where they already have products available that we've been able to improve our sell-through of those products given the additional contacts that we have in industries like oil and gas, as an example, some in industrial. So we see some good opportunities with our distribution capability as well. So it's going well.
Right. And you mentioned that you are targeting $1 billion to $2 billion per year of acquisitions.
Right.
Why is that the right number? You know, are large opportunities possible?
Yeah. So when we set out the $1 billion to $2 billion guidance on capital allocation towards acquisitions, I was basically looking at the pipeline, looking at what we've done, which is that's the kind of range that we've transacted at over recent years, and we felt that that was a good place for us to start in terms of providing some guidance on acquisitions. They have been traditionally bottoms-up type approach, and so what we're doing going forward is a couple things. One is our experience in that area has taught us that we tend to do better in terms of execution when they're a little bit larger on average than smaller. So we've encouraged our businesses to look a little larger than the average we've been doing, more like in the area of 300, to pick a number or a range, say 300 to 700 million, versus the 50 to 100 million that many of the transactions have been in the past. Because we do better when they're larger and they get prioritized in terms of integrating. And we clearly have the financial wherewithal to transact larger than that. And so we are putting in place a corporate sort of approach to that to look at some transactions that could be larger than that. We haven't transacted at that larger level. The biggest we've ever done is $1.2 billion. And in part, it's because as we look at our businesses, the average size of a business we have is $750 million of revenue annually. So when you get up into the larger size, the risk of successful integration increases because they might cross multiple sectors. And so we're thoughtful about proceeding on that basis. But we think it's appropriate for us to consider transactions that could be larger than we've done historically.
With that, our time is up. So, David, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.